Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, actress Mary Birdsong talks about how her mother got the money to send her to Paris when she was 16.
I was in a French class from fourth grade on, which was awesome. And I think my sophomore year, they were going to Paris for a cultural educational trip. And I really wanted to go. And I think at first my mom did something reasonable, like ask my father if he could help us out to pay for it. And he did not want to do that. My mom did what any practical parent would do in this situation. She borrowed $300 from a priest and took it to Atlantic City to play blackjack. She was gambling to try and win the money. She was good at it.
Today on the show, actress Mary Birdsong talks about how her mother got the money to send her to Paris on a school trip when she was 16. Stay close.
Hey, hon, how you doing? This is Mary Birdsong. You're listening to Storyworthy, okay? All right, I gotta go.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show of over 9 years, what is happening, Mary Birdsong?
9 years?
I know. Or if you're a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I hope you guys enjoyed the story last week with Albert Corrado. Albert is a friend of mine. He told a very difficult story about his sister being killed at Trader Joe's while she was working. And it happened last summer, July 21st of 2018. And Albert and I actually recorded it last fall, but then because of legal purposes, he wasn't allowed to drop it until the case was over with the LAPD, who shot his sister. Yeah, anyway, it's a terrible, terrible situation. But the story he told, you know, the story of the day, it's really very beautiful. It's sad, it's heartbreaking, but it's also like he's a great speaker, and he's an inspiration, and he's just been through a lot. So anyway, you guys, go back, listen to Albert's story, but wow. Not today, because I am here with actress and comedian Mary Birdsong, and she brings forth the topic, turning 16 in Paris. Turning 16 in Paris. I was telling you earlier that I could have a podcast called, or a story called Honeymooning in Paris, because I spent both of my honeymoons in Paris.
I wonder, do you know how to say honeymoon in Paris? That's a good one to know how to, because I don't think
that
would translate directly.
No, but
you know,
that
it'd
would
be like,
good.
I want some honey pastries. Like, yeah. It wouldn't, you know, honeymoon.
That bonjour.
La lune.
Merci beaucoup.
Yeah.
Champs-Élysées.
C'est magnifique. Je parle français un peu.
Listen, Paris is, in my opinion, still, to this day, to me, it's the ultimate city to go to.
It's so cool.
It's just so, everywhere you turn, it's like an outdoor museum.
Yeah. And I just instantly feel like, I mean, I haven't been back since I was 16,
oh my,
by the way.
Oh, gosh, really?
But even then, like, I didn't know shit from shit, but I was like, I'm Dorothy Parker and Ernest Hemingway.
Yeah, doesn't it? It leaves such an impression.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, it is timeless. So if you go back today, it would be similar, but here's the difference. You would eat in better restaurants, I'm sure, and stay probably more comfortably. Right. At least when I've traveled, I was backpacking when I was 21. And we went through Paris and, you know, we're just staying in hostels. And, but then I was a little older. I was there like 4 years ago, actually like on a date. And it was very, very nice. Do you know what I mean? The point is, I love Paris and I'm anxious to hear your story. But when I was 16, I certainly wasn't going to Paris. I mean, first of all, my family could have never afforded it. Because actually, Mary, like you, I think you're one of five, or are you one of six?
Let me see. I have three brothers and sisters I grew up with and two half-sisters that I didn't grow up with.
But you're one of
whatever
six.
Whatever that is.
You are one of six.
Yeah.
I'm one of six. And I have four sisters. Anyway, so when we were growing up, of course, there was no money whatsoever. The only thing we did growing up was we would leave Pittsburgh and drive 7.5 hours to the Jersey Shore, which I knew you grew up on.
Yeah, honey, you went down to Jersey Shore, hon.
I told you, we have a lot in common.
We really do. Hon.
That's right. And when I was 17, I moved down to the shore, and I worked at Core Brothers Yogurt on the boardwalk. And then the following year, I went back, did the same thing, and I was lifeguarded. And we called the tourists. I hope they still, I mean, was it
Shoobies.
Yes! Oh my God! Somebody knows what Shoobies means.
That's what we call people that, like, you know, weren't locals. And I was only there 3 months of the year, but I felt like I was a local.
Oh, yeah. Is he a Shoobie?
And this was like early 80s. And so we're talking Hobie Cats, OP shorts.
Totally.
Catamarans. It was Pringle.
My favorite store was Surf Unlimited. Mm-hmm. I'm still in touch with the owner. He moved to Arizona, John Gross.
But you live down in Long Island, Long Beach Island.
Long Beach Island, yeah.
And that is more of a, it's South Jersey, but it's more of like an Outer Bank, isn't it?
Or yeah, it's I guess a barrier island, they call it. It's almost like a mini Manhattan, a skinnier, minier Manhattan.
Yeah, so it gets hit first in the hurricane.
It does. In fact, Hurricane Sandy happened, it got trisected, not just bisected. It got split into three parts.
Well, is any of your family still there?
No, my mom had a house up until she passed away in 2016. She had a house on the mainland by that point, which I was just horrified. I was like, we're going to be pineys? That's what we called. If you lived on the mainland, you were a piney. For the Pine Barrens.
I see. Interesting. Oh, it's so Sopranos.
Which was like Deliverance. I call it Deliverance with surfboards. It was really, yeah. You would have thought you were in like backwoods Mississippi.
Yeah, or the Sopranos. Remember when they drove
Adriana? That's a great episode.
To the Pine Barrens.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was the one, right?
It's the home of the Jersey Devil.
Yes, interesting. And so were you actually then on the water, on the beach?
Yeah. That's where I grew up. It was a really beautiful, I mean, as a kid, I was like, it's so boring. We didn't have a McDonald's. We didn't have a mall. We didn't have a, you know.
But yeah, you're really isolated.
Really isolated. There were no traffic lights 9 months out of the year.
Yeah.
You know, really, I remember when we went to high school, we had to go to the mainland because there was no high school on the island. And they were like, do you guys have a school there?
Did you have
and I was like, no, we just catch up. They just like... You know what I mean?
But it is it's so isolated in that it's you've got a summer group that comes in for 90 days and then it's back to nobody.
Yeah, so it's kind of an interesting mix of like small town, big town.
But wasn't it always like in the summer, like all these new crops of like boys would be coming in because they're vacationing and stuff, right?
I was so in love with Jeff Stark. He was from he went to the Upper Darby Country Day School in Paramus. He was a Jew from Paramus. And I was like, he's so exotic.
Yeah, well, he probably was.
And rich.
Yeah, he probably was that too. Mm-hmm. How fun. What was down there though, real quick, in Jersey, what was down there like in terms of... there was no boardwalk, right? It wasn't like an amusement park.
No, I think there was maybe in like the 1800s, but there wasn't.
Wait, are you kidding?
I'm not kidding. I think there was in like 1800s and it got like washed away.
Wow.
Yeah.
Strange. Well, I could see it getting washed away. I mean, Hurricane Sandy took a lot of boardwalks out, right?
And in the 70s, I guess, or the 80s, maybe the 60s, there was a huge hurricane as well. Yeah.
Did it wipe out Asbury Park? Was that one of them?
I'm not sure.
I just keep seeing on the news like a pier with, you know, the rides at the end and then roller coaster's like half off.
I think they had like a Ferris wheel in the ocean
Oh God.
But yeah, my mom, there was no industry to speak of at all.
Yeah.
And my mom had no degree, no job skills, but she was like, she knew she was divorcing my father. She was going for a drive with us kids. And she was like, and I just saw the sign.
Wow.
On the road that said Long Beach Island. And I thought that would make a wonderful place to raise children. And so I drove there. Like, she was just
That's
like...
That's unbelievable.
She's just a bizarre, wonderful creature.
But she must have been, like, incredibly strong-willed to just take children and move them there.
Kind of. I have a little bit of that sort of, like, big, sweeping gesture. Almost like Mary Lynn Rice Cub. Yeah. If you guys haven't listened to the Mary Lynn Rice Cub episode, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Just kind of like, I'm going to go to Mexico. Like, just get these ideas and think it's going to work out.
But it did work out,
and it did work out. Actually, in hindsight, it was a great move. Not economically for her or us, but a wonderful, safe place to
and
go.
A family
we didn't lock the doors. We ran around barefoot till it got dark.
I have a child. I don't know if you look around my place here. You will see hints of my child.
It's so not a child house, though. Like, I didn't have to step over any toys.
Well, now, because she's a little older. She's 12 years old. But I got to tell you something. Being a parent, it is so much easier to put your kid in front of a screen than help them find a book that they like. You know what I mean? Like, my daughter has a lot of books, but what happens is she reads the same books over and over. Like, I don't need any more Wimpy Kid. I mean, not that there's anything wrong with that.
Right, right, right.
But sometimes you want to expand their minds. And so we have found this really cool book club, and it's called Literati. L-I-T-E-R-A-T-I. And I got to tell you, it is very cool. It's a subscription book club that makes it easy to find unique and interesting books for your kids. So literary boxes, they contain 5 age-appropriate books based on a theme, right? Like the spirit of adventure or the animal kingdom. So right off the bat, it's personalized is what it is. It also contains exclusive original art and a personalized note for your child. Plus, they give you these really cool little stickers that your child can put on their books. Each month, you buy the books you want. You return the rest for free. It's super easy. They give you this really sturdy box, and there's no charge to return the books. And for a limited time right now, you guys, if you go to literatibooks.com and use the promo code STORY, you'll get $20 off your first box. Plus, kids 3 and up get a special blacklight pen. Now, this is their very best offer, you guys, anywhere. So to get it, you have to go to literatibooks.com, use the promo code STORY. You'll get $20 off your first box. Plus, you'll get a free blacklight pen for kids 3 and up. How fun. I love a blacklight pen. Anyway, you guys, again, literatibooks.com, use the promo code STORY, and you will get $20 off your first month. You guys are going to try this out. Book clubs. It's fun, right?
Oh, totally. It reminds me of Netflix before you would return them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When you didn't watch stuff online, they would send you movies, you would return them for free, and it was like, this is so convenient.
Yeah, because there's no postage involved.
Yeah.
And so that's really nice.
And it's not that like crazy like library pressure, like, oh, they're going to arrest
yeah.
me.
Shh, shh. My daughter was thrilled when she got this box. And here's one book I'm holding in my hand called Can a Bee Sting a Bee? It's a good question,
Ooh.
Isn't it? Anyway, it's great. I love it. I can never say no to my kid if it has to do with books or music.
Is there an age limit? Because
you know,
I don't have children, and it sounds good to me.
Funny you should say that. We all like to read.
Like, you know, when you go to a restaurant, you're like, can I get the like junior hot dog?
Yeah, I think you can do
with
that.
With the clown face bun? That's what I want.
And I want the placemat to play on
right.
as well. I mean, I want something to do.
I want crayons, and I want foie gras.
Yeah, that's right. I'm an adult, and I act like a child. I'm going to get what I want. You have done so many incredible roles as an actress. You have been a comedic actress. You are a dramatic actress. You're like everything in between. And then on top of it, you sing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm so impressed.
Thank you.
I mean, really, you're like the quadruple threat.
Thank you.
What is, I know people ask you this all the time, I bet, but before we get to your story, what is harder to do for you, comedy or drama?
Drama.
Really?
Mm.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Because like, for instance, you were in The Descendants.
Yeah.
Which, first of all, I love that movie to begin with because I love movies
Thank
set
you.
In Hawaii.
Isn't it great? It's
yeah.
a really great film.
It's a great film all the way around. It's an interesting premise. You know, George Clooney's wife is on a motorboat and they hit something and she goes sailing off the motorboat with a very serious head injury.
Yeah. So she's in a coma for the whole movie.
She's in a coma the whole movie. Yeah. It's pretty grim.
I told the actress, and I'm sorry, I can't remember her name, but the woman who played the wife who's in a coma
yeah.
and I played her best friend. I was like,
yeah.
if you do not write a one-woman show about finally being in a movie with George Clooney where he kisses you and not getting to speak
yeah.
or do anything but lay in a bed.
There's that one
then
scene
you're crazy.
Where he just like loses it toward the end.
Yes.
And she's in that bed lying there. I don't know how they made her look so gaunt.
Yeah, and connected to all those wires. Plus, she smoked and she was dying. She was like had to lay there in a hospital where you can't smoke the entire
wow.
time.
Wow, but
you
it wasn't
I mean?
A real hospital. It was a set.
I think it was.
No kidding.
But I think we were on, I don't know if the whole hospital was.
Where, what hospital? Was it Queens Hospital in Honolulu by any chance?
I can't remember.
Queens Medical Center, because I happened to spend some time there.
All right.
She's out of the blue. You know.
You honeymooned there for your third
That's
marriage?
Right. That's right. No, I'm going back to Paris. I have set a precedent. Sure, all the marriages have failed, but that's not the point. Listen, I'm thrilled that you're here, and we've got lots more to talk about, but first we're going to hear your story about turning 16 in Paris. By the way, when I was 16, we went to the Jersey Shore, and then if it was like a school thing, we just went to the zoo every year. We went to the zoo every year, and we'd go to the Heinz factory, because I grew up in Pittsburgh.
I love it.
And they made ketchup there.
You're like, this is hot.
And that was
this
it.
This is such a turn-on.
That was all the places
Heinz
we went.
Heinz ketchup.
So. Listen, you guys, before we get to Mary's story, I wanted to remind you to follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Storyworthy. You know all that stuff. I also started a Patreon campaign. I've got some people over there supporting me, which is fun. I will actually help you write your own story if you're interested in something like that. So go over there, check out the four tiers. It's no big deal, no pressure. Patreon.com/Storyworthy. I love you. You love me. Sponsors come and go. But here we are with Mary Birdsong. I was going to say contestant number. Not contestant number. Guest number.
You know, by way, do I win the cat?
You are
do
guest,
I win Sophie?
I kid you not. You're guest 575.
Wow.
So anyway, you guys, you've been with me for a while. I've been with you. Help me out. Would you do that, please? Yes. Thank you.
P.S. You're the only podcast host I know that makes me laugh during the social media pitch. You're just like, come
social
on, just
media,
do it.
I can't take
come on, you
it,
guys. Just come on.
The only thing I kind of like.
You're so good about it.
I like Twitter. I do like Twitter because I like wordplay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But other than that, I have. It's a chore, man.
Oh, my God.
It's
I know.
A chore. I mean, I respect it, and I'm thrilled to have the platforms available to get my show out. Because honestly, without Facebook, I might not have ever had a podcast.
Right.
I mean, I need those resources, and I do like connecting with some people from my past. But for the most part, there's just this insane pressure. Do you feel that?
Totally. I mean, if you think about it, it's like our version of milking the cow. Do you know what I mean? That's what it's become. It's making the donuts. It's like, all right, I'm going to post about my new makeup tutorial. Like today I was like, my hair is pink right now. You guys can't see it, but my roots are showing, but I ran out of the stuff to redo my roots. So I was like, oh, I discovered that I could put pink eyeshadow in my hair and it worked.
Wow.
And I was like, hey, God, I'm not a makeup tutorial person, obviously, but I was like, I should totally post this. And I was like, ugh.
How did you get pink hair? Did you have to bleach it first?
I did, because I'm a brunette.
And how was that bleaching process?
I totally screwed it up
myself. You did it yourself?
I tried to do it myself on the cheap, times being what they are, and screwed it up. So then I called my gal, who normally does my hair.
And then she fixed it?
And she fixed it beautifully.
Did she charge you more or the same? Or did you think to yourself, why didn't I just do it?
Charged me about the same.
But did you think, why I should have done that to begin with?
Yeah.
My daughter really wanted blue hair to start seventh grade. You know, who doesn't? And it was like this whole thing, and she saved up this money, and she was so excited.
And
it was
did she do it herself and it didn't come out blue?
No, we went to the hairdresser, but it did not take. And they said even though she's blonde, they said the only way it'll take is if you're going to have to bleach it. They didn't charge me. It's
that's nice.
Hi, Paul. Shout out to Paul McKay over there, Salon Paul Florent. You are awesome, and I'm super happy you're here, Mary Birdsong. You are, like we said, an actress and a singer, and I say immediately comedian because you've done so many funny things. Like, you were in Reno 911, and just that one, I was looking at you on YouTube, and you've got this thing on, you're on stage, and you're with a big furry guy, who plays
a doggy dog cop,
and then
talking to a high school about drugs.
You guys,
Smithy is drugs.
You guys start literally tumbling around on the stage.
He's like, he's humping me. He's humping me, absolutely. And I pull
a
gun on him,
guffawing. It was so funny. You were also on The Daily Show, which was super cool. And then you were on, Conan, or what's another nighttime?
I did Conan as the staring contest people for a while, but I was also on as a guest, which was so exciting.
Yeah.
That was when I was on Broadway.
Exciting. Yeah, it's thrilling. Yes, and you've been on Broadway in the show Hairspray. Amazing. Mm-hmm. And then you worked with Martin Short, who's my hero. Fame Becomes Me. That was on Broadway.
Yeah.
How many shows of that did you do?
Oh, a lot, because we toured, even though it wasn't on Broadway for more than one season, I say season like it's television.
Well, I don't know.
But, it wasn't more than, it was August to January or something like that. But we toured all year before that and did two workshops before that. So it was a long time spending with
those people.
Was
Martin Short on tour with you then?
Yes.
And did he split? Did he leave the tour? Did he go home?
No. We did a sit down in Toronto for a month, I think.
Wow.
And he has this beautiful lake house up in the Canadian lake area.
Amazing.
And we got to stay there with him. He took us with him. And
Is he naturally funny all the time?
He naturally is. Yes, he's just incredible.
He really seems it. He seems so just legitimate and.
Yes. And mean. He's terribly, terribly mean, but in the most egalitarian way. I don't drink. I'm sober. And he'd be like, we're going to get Birdsong to drink. Come on, Birdsong. And I'm like, shut up.
Now, more recently, you've been on Succession on HBO.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yes.
They've got a lot of billboards out right now. Have you noticed?
They really do. They're really...
And Succession, it's supposed to be kind of mirroring whose family? Like a Trump family? Or
people say the Murdochs and they keep denying it. So who knows?
I see. Yeah. Like but Rupert Murdoch. Rupert Murdoch, that empire.
I guess had Fox and maybe still does. I don't know. But yeah.
And here's something you did on YouTube, which I can't even believe your ingenuity and your commitment to artistry. You did a different character every day for 365 days.
Well, for 180 days so far.
I see. Okay, so I
haven't finished it yet.
I was scrolling, but their dozens are passing. I can't watch them all.
It's crazy.
It's okay.
They're not all gems.
You're still doing it.
I'm still technically doing it. I just had to take a little bit of a hiatus because that pesky work kept happening.
That's a good problem. But each character, what are you drawing upon?
Sometimes just desperation of like, I got to come up with something.
But do you go to like, okay, elementary school friends, go. Or something like that in your past, or like my next door neighbor, or a doctor I knew.
Sometimes, yeah. So like I did one about my lovely, lovely dental receptionist at my dentist's office, just because I love her voice.
Yeah.
Hey, how you doing, Miss Tony? We're actually in my dentist's office. Listen, I got an opening.
And she's just always cheery. She'd be like, the Twin Towers were just hit. Oh, my gosh.
When you were, yeah, it always goes up at the end.
Yeah.
When you are an impressionist, I would imagine, because would you say you're an impressionist? Or no?
To an extent. To an extent. I love just like being other people.
Because when you hear voices, then you must immediately break it down, like in your head.
To me, I think it's just like music. It's like learning a song, except it's a person.
And a lot of times, I've done a lot of voiceovers, like I've narrated 11 audiobooks.
Yeah, you have such a great voice.
But I've never done like the character thing. Like I don't have that. It's just such a talent to be able to do so many voices. But I guess in my head, I'm thinking that you would draw upon like people from your past. And then you think about like the speed. That's what I was going to say. The speed of their voice. Mm-hmm. Some people talk very quickly. And that's how you can discern voices just by the speed of what you're talking.
Yeah. It's like there's got to be some sort of hook that you can latch, like a handle that you can latch onto and hold onto. Because like if you think of a suitcase, it's filled with stuff, right? But you can't get to the stuff unless you can like hang on to it, like carry the suitcase and open it. And so there's something that lets you like hold it and open it to see what's inside. But it's a way in, if that makes any sense.
Now I know why I'm not able to do it.
And it's not technical at all. It's just like, it's like a dog who likes the sound of a certain person's voice. It's not like what they say. It's like the sound of what they say. And
interesting.
And the vibe that they put out and the...
You're listening in a different way,
I think. And it's like you feel like you know something about them that they're not saying.
Yeah. Huh. Listen, you guys can find Mary over on her website, marybirdsong.com, and you can also find her on Twitter. And are you doing the Instagram thing as well?
Sure. Twitter is at Mary Birdsong. Instagram is at Mary Birdsong Official.
Oh, interesting. Somebody took Mary Birdsong?
They did. Isn't that weird?
I hate that. Why do people do that? It's terrible.
I don't know.
Well, I know why they do it. They want you to pay them for it.
Well, I hunted her down.
Did you? And she?
And I made her change her name.
Really? Nuh-uh.
No.
Nuh-uh. I'm so naive. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Mary Birdsong.
So I was 15, and I lived in South Jersey on the shore. And we were talking earlier about, you know, sort of economically challenged growing up. And so we, you know, at times we're on welfare, food stamps, got the, like, charity lunch at school. Embarrassing.
Did they point that out? Because they're not allowed to do that anymore.
I think we had to like use a special like bright neon coupon or something.
So nice.
Or like go to
That's
a special
terrible.
Line.
That's horrible.
They're like government cheese. Oh. You know, like we had to wear a hobo outfit.
Cruel.
It was awful. I had to sing Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? No. But even if it wasn't like that, like that's what you felt like it was. So that was a whole thing. Like, I remember having to sort of, like, being at the cafeteria table, and this one girl, I'll call her Jill. I remember she was like, your mom works at T-Burger. And my mom, I think at the time, was, like, working at T-Burger, which is, like, a local fast food joint, because we didn't have a McDonald's. There was, like, I think there was, like, T-Burger and T-Drink. Like, I don't know, there were, like, T-somethings.
We had a Winkies.
Winkies.
And they had the big wink.
Nice, the big wink! You know what? I'm going to get the big wink.
So funny, right?
Right.
And we had Wawa's in South Jersey, too.
Oh, hon, go down to Wawa, get a hoagie. Oh, glass of water.
Tasty cake.
Get some orange juice. Hon, you want lettuce tomato?
You want mayo on it? How about the Phillies, hon? That's my favorite awful, horrible accent in the world. Philly accent. My friend Austin, who grew up in Cherry Hill, which is basically Philadelphia, but in New Jersey, he would call me up. He had this character he would do called Uncle Lou. And he wouldn't leave me any message except, "Hey, how you doing, hon? It's Uncle Lou. He's talking to your Aunt Teresa. She's over here at the Acme getting some hoagies. All right, give me a call, hon." Hangs up. Made me laugh and laugh and laugh. He's gone now. God bless Austin. But so that's where I grew up, is the South Jersey place where I was kind of surrounded, I guess, by middle class, maybe. To me, they seemed like upper middle class or like wealthy if they owned their own home. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like they had a car that wasn't from like 20 years ago that works. Ah, that's interesting when you can actually drive it. And like we washed our clothes at a laundromat. Like everything was just kind of like off and weird. You know when you like have that rack of like slightly damaged or slightly irregular? Like I felt like we were just slightly irregular. Like we didn't live in a shack. You know what I mean? We had running water, but I was just like, why do we have dinner at 10:30 at night? Like my mom was a night owl. My mom was like this poet from, you know, like the 1800s. She was a very sort of like Tennessee Williams, black sheep, Southern belle that moved up north. And she was from Louisiana. And she had a very soft voice. And she always sounded like she was just about to cry, even if she wasn't. Oh, Christine, if she were here right now, look at this beautiful apartment. Oh, it's so bright and colorful. Oh, and look at the grass, Mary. Like, she just, I don't know what was happening in there.
Ethereal.
Ethereal. There, that's the word. And she really was. She was a poet. She was a writer. And we would, like, encourage her to, like, send her writing out to, like, send it to magazines. And, you know, she would get a job at, like, the local newspaper, which they didn't do any news. Do you know what I mean? Like, literally one time the front page during the winter was like, somebody broke into a house and played their Monopoly game. And they didn't put the pieces away. That's just wrong. Or there was like one that was like suspicious persons seen. Like, what did that mean? Black? Like, I don't know. I don't know if that was code, but I don't know. But so it was this weird, very small town. So I'm sure everybody kind of knew everybody's business. So in a way, I almost feel like if I had grown up in like a really poor community, like maybe I would have just felt more normal. But so I think I was set up to succeed as like that outsider mm-hmm. comic, you know, the thing that creates a comedian, right? Yeah. A mother that's needs cheering up. That's one. That's a theme I found that repeats itself over and over again. Mm-hmm. Who's either very sick or just needs some boosting. Yeah. I don't know if you saw the Stephen Colbert Anderson Cooper.
Yes, I did.
Interview on CNN. If the people listening, you guys and gals, watch it no matter what. Look it up. It's, I call it like the Joseph Campbell power of myth interview of our generation. Yeah. There was a famous interview with Bill Moyers and Joseph Campbell, this mythology folklorist, famous teacher. And it's so amazing. But they both talked about sort of that feeling, that responsibility to be a support for their mother.
Yeah, because Anderson Cooper's mother had just died, right? Gloria Vanderbilt. And that mm-hmm. was after that. And then Stephen Colbert lost his mother when he was 12.
He lost his father and the boys, he called them, two brothers.
Yes, in an accident. It was either a lake accident or a car accident.
And something. they were a big family. It was like 11 kids or something, but Catholic. He was the youngest. So it was just him and his mom left. Mm-hmm. And even though she was a very different mother from Anderson Cooper's mom, and she was sounds like a very strong woman, especially mm-hmm. to have survived that mm-hmm. And not gone nuts. But he still felt this kind of, you know, put your big boy pants on and make mom laugh. Yeah. And also he said it gave him a sort of a fearlessness about, you know, being seen as foolish or awkward, because he's like, when you survive something horrible like that, I think you do have a sort of a like, well, nothing can touch me now. What, you know, I survived that. So you think I'm weird? Okay.
Yeah.
God bless, you know. So all that to say, so that's kind of a very similar mom
mm-hmm. that I grew up with. And I think Anderson Cooper called his mom a fragile space alien, and he had to show her how to, like, get by on Earth. Oh. Like, I kind of felt that way. Like, wow. My mother needed a guide. You know, she needed, like, a Sherpa to go to the grocery store, you know. And so there wasn't a lot of, like, childhood traditional. And even when I was, like, younger and things were, to me, seemed stable, I just never liked playing with the other, like, I always resented when they would, like, put, like, you're 9 and she's 9.
Yeah, well, that's got to be perfect.
Go for it. You know, there are a lot. I'm 51. There are a lot of 51-year-olds I don't care for, yeah. believe it or not.
Yeah.
We don't just, like, get in a room and play jacks, yeah. you know.
9-year-olds, too. A right. lot of them I don't like.
And that was one thing. Like, my mother also had this weird edge about her. Like, she was like, she loved children, but she was like, you know what? I love children, but not all children. Some yeah. children are assholes.
That's fair.
And I was like, love it. But so she was this very eccentric, you know, one night we'd have, like, Swanson frozen dinners on our rickety TV trays. And then the next night she'd be like, I made Yorkshire pudding. You know, like, she loved, like, British things. She loved foreign movies with subtitles. And, you know, it was just like champagne taste on a beer budget. We were raised very fancy and very white trash at the same time, which I think was kind of an awesome combo. But I always had this, like, I'm going to aspire to greatness, you know, as soon as I can get a pair of sneakers that fit me or something, you know. And I did have a sense that the electricity might go off. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I had that sort of adult knowledge of, you know, you have to pay for things. This isn't a given. And so my French class, so here's an example. Like, I was in a French class and in from fourth grade on, which was awesome. I remember 2% of it. Du passant, je pense. But I really liked French class because, again, it was sort of like hearing people's voices.
And escaping.
And escaping, yeah. And, like, allowed me to be somebody else. And so I enjoyed it. And I think sophomore year, they were going to Paris for a cultural educational trip. And my best friend, Nina Toole, was going. And a lot of people that I liked. And I really wanted to go. And I think at first my mom did something reasonable, like ask my father if he could help us out to pay for it. And he did not want to do that for whatever reason. And he had a very lovely home in Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I, like, worked after school and stuff. And so, but I didn't really think I was going to get to go. I think my mom said, like, well, we'll try. We'll see what we can do.
What was the amount?
It was, like, over $1,000. Oh, yeah. And this was in, what, 84, 1984? I should try and find out if I have some record of how much that cost back then. But to me, whatever it was, it seemed like a lot of money, yeah. that we didn't have. And so she was trying, and my 16th birthday was coming up. And then my mom also, she didn't have a job most of the time. She was very sort of like a sociophobe. The house was dark. It was sort of warm and cozy and, you know, inviting. I almost think of, like, those, like, what do they call them? Like, the Hobbit, the Shire. It was like a Shire, you know, but with pork and beans and tater tots. And so I really wanted to go. And I was also, P.S., in sixth grade, I remember, I was really proud of this. My teacher came up and said, we had to take a language aptitude test before we went into junior high and take a language. And so I got the highest score. And it was kind of a cool test. It was, like, yeah. made up languages and stuff. But I got the highest score in the entire school. And so I was like, I was thinking I was going to major in French because I had no, like, fantasies or any even desire at that point to be a entertainer or a performer. It just seemed like, well, you don't do that. You know what I mean? You might make people laugh, but you don't do
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
They grow those people on farms and exotic, you know, islands that aren't the island I live on. And
they just didn't have anything to draw upon. How could they know?
Right. Right. Yeah. And so I assumed I wasn't going, I think. I'm trying to remember. It's so hard when you tell these stories from many, many years ago. Like, I'm sure half of this I am totally misremembering, but, you know, what can you do?
Yeah.
But so it was getting closer and closer to my birthday, and my best friend is talking about going, and my other friend, and so my mom, unbeknownst to me, well, I remember I did a show about my mom, and I said, like, my mom did what any practical parent would do in this situation. She borrowed $300 from a priest and took it to Atlantic City to play blackjack. Right? That's in the Spock parenting handbook or whatever. But the fun part is, my mom would tend to go, you know, at night, you gamble at night. So I remember one night, because she couldn't afford a babysitter. I just thought of that now. No wonder why she took us. She piled my little sister and me. I was 15, so my little sister would have been 8.
Wow.
And we kind of got a little bit dressed up, and she took us, you know, put us in the car and drove us down to Atlantic City.
Which is so South Jersey.
Right.
At that time, especially, it was hot, man.
Yeah.
Atlantic City was on fire.
Yeah, go down Atlantic City.
Yeah, the Sands.
Our lovely Caesars. President.
Yeah, Trump Palace or whatever.
Was busy getting, you know, being bankrupt and failing, mm-hmm. And turning the whole place into a horrible, horrible crime nest. But so we went to Atlantic City and she was playing blackjack. And I didn't.
Where would she put you guys?
Well, that's the thing. We couldn't go on the
floor.
Casino floor.
Yeah.
Because we were underage. So I remember we were sitting on this balcony, like high above the gambling floor.
Oh, no.
Right? And like two angels on that, like the Raphael angels on the cloud. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you're watching her.
Watching her down below. She's wearing like a white lace. They call them prairie blouses. They were all the rage.
Yeah.
Gunny sacks. Yeah. They were lacy affairs with big ruffles. They were supposed to be like reminiscent of pioneer days.
Laura Ashley-ish.
Laura Ashley. Oh, yes. And I was dressed up in this outfit of, you know, these like nice hand-me-downs that my downstairs neighbor gave me. She was like, she worked in an office, and I thought that was so cool and professional. And I like wanted her to be my mother, and she gave me her like throwaway nice clothes. And so my little sister Veronica, God bless her, is 8 years old, and I'm over it. You know what I mean? P.S. There's no cell phones. There's no Game Boys. There's no fax machine. Like, there's nothing you can bring to, like, you know.
Bide the time.
I don't even think we were using Walkmans yet, really.
Yeah.
So I was just annoyed that I'm, like, having a babysit and sitting in this dumb lobby. But I'm watching my mom, and she's, like, nursing one drink the whole time. And she's so, like, pristine. She's so self-conscious about her appearance and manners. And, you know, it's like...
She's doing this. She's gambling for you to go to Paris.
Yeah, which I did not know.
Oh, wow.
And so what's the... Jane Austen, what's the sad poet who's like Edna St. Vincent Millay or something? Like, it's like that.
Yeah.
It's like this 18th... Or 19th century poet is sitting at the blackjack table
Emily
with a bunch
Plath.
Of... Yeah, and you know, like, hey, how you doing?
Sylvia Plath.
Yeah.
God.
And except she would never read Sylvia Plath because she was far too depressed as it was. So
yeah.
She would want to read, like, I want to read Robert Browning or, you know, I don't know.
Or Reader's Digest.
I want it to rhyme. I want to see some effort. So I didn't know that. But she was gambling to try and win the money. And she won over $2,000.
Oh, my God. Nuh-uh.
Yeah. So, like, she was good at it.
That night.
Yeah.
Wow.
She was good at it. And it almost became a problem because when she didn't have rent, sometimes she would be like, I got to do this. This is the only option right now. And oftentimes she would win. I think also because she had that appearance. You almost like doing like the hustler, like Paul Newman, sort of like nobody would think she would.
Yeah.
Be really good at what she was
and
doing.
And she was playing blackjack.
She was playing blackjack. Maybe other stuff too, but not slot machines and stuff like
and
that.
And then you did go to Paris.
I did. Oh, sorry. Yeah, like cut to the chase, Mare.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Did you share that with other kids? Did you tell people?
Well, I mean, I went with a whole group.
But did you tell them, I'm married. We didn't think you could come. Well, my mother won this money the other night
I don't
over
think
at the
I
Taj
did.
Mahal.
I don't think I did.
Yeah.
Because it was like... It was a secret.
It's kind of dirty in a way.
That's like, the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did she give you spending money as well?
No. I think I maybe had like $200 of babysitting money.
Yeah.
For like
Turn
a week.
Turn those into francs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I ran out of money while I was there.
Yeah.
And
But you were with a school.
But
okay.
I was with a school.
Yeah.
And of course, I was a goody two-shoes. in high school, like super nerd.
Yeah.
But I was like, it was like Vegas. It was like Atlantic City, like what happens in Paris stays in Paris. Like,
oh.
We were on the plane. We were like writing up a French like revolution sort of declaration of independence. We were drinking already. We were allowed to drink because of the cultural quote unquote experience. Because
they drink wine in Paris when you're 15.
And
or
so the parents had to sign a permission slip to let us do that.
Oh my gosh. Who were the chaperones?
Madame Hernandez.
And she was the teacher as well.
She was the teacher. She was amazing. She was part of the French resistance during World War II.
Oh, it's so Les Mis.
She was unbelievable.
She'd be like an Eponine or something.
She was unbelievably great.
Wow.
But for some reason, I was like suddenly sitting with a table of popular girls. And I was like, oh my God, I'm a different person here.
Yeah.
All bets are off. I'm cool here.
Yeah.
I was like Jerry Lewis. Like, I'm big in Paris. And they love me here. And, like, I knew how to say, like, screwdriver in French.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And you were wearing dark clothes.
Oui,
silhouettes.
Oui. Yeah. And jus d'orange mélangé, s'il vous plaît.
Ooh, you do that so good. What does it say? What did you mean?
Because they were trying to order a screwdriver, and all they could get was orange juice. And so I was like, no, jus d'orange, orange juice, mélangé, mixed with vodka. Or vodka, whatever
Smear
it was.
Enough.
Yeah, I forget. But they're like, oh, oui. And I was like, I got you. And, and so, but I got shit-faced because I didn't know how to drink.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah.
So I was like, I had like red wine followed by slow gin fizzes.
In Paris.
In Paris with these like cool girls.
Oh.
I don't think I had anything in my stomach.
Slow gin fizz? That's like
gross.
A wedding drink.
And red wine. P.S. I think slow gin fizz is what I saw my mom drinking at the casino.
Yeah.
And
it was like a whiskey sour.
Yeah.
An apricot sour.
A Tom Collins. Give me a Greyhound, would you?
A pina colada. Why not?
How about a rusty nail?
Something with a sidecar.
Yeah. And so I got so shit-faced and I got drunk and I fell into a fountain. Yeah. And I'm the goody two-shoes. I'm not the party girl.
Yeah.
But I got made an example of. Madame was furious with me, and I wasn't allowed to drink for the rest of the trip.
Wow, yeah.
And I have a great photo of me with super big jersey hair and esprit corduroy jeans.
Sure, sure.
With a croissant, amazingly hungover.
And then you came back, though, from Paris.
I did.
And it was a success.
It was.
I love your mother so much.
I do, too.
I just can't believe she did that. I mean, it's so kind. Now, did she ever do anything like that again in terms of gambling to get you something?
All the time.
No way.
Yeah. So and it was always like a scheme. It was always like, Ralph Cramden, like, I got an idea.
Well, do you remember her losing as well?
Oh, yeah.
And what was that like?
Scary.
That's very upsetting.
Yeah.
So she was an addict. No.
I think she was. I mean, she didn't drink. Normally, she like had like one drink if she went out somewhere. But she had medication. I think she was sort of like a pill head.
Wow.
She was on Valium. And she was hard. She was like not until she was 70 was she diagnosed as bipolar and borderline personality disorder.
No.
So there was definitely a flip side, a dark side we're not talking about today, which was very hard.
Her creativeness sounds like you got a lot of that.
Oh, beautiful.
Amazing.
And the craftiness.
Her creativity,
You know, poverty is the mother of crafty.
Yeah,
like,
no kidding.
She was just always taking,
being broke is a huge impetus.
Right. I saw a sofa on the street coming here that somebody was throwing out and I immediately wanted to like go over and check it out because we used to get our furniture from people's sidewalk trash.
Yeah, I remember going around on garbage pickup day and looking at people's stuff. But a lot of times that was just like to look for stuff that we could throw off the roof. You know what I mean? To smash. My brother used to love smashing things. You know,
I love it.
We grew up very similarly. And when I was in South Jersey, it was 1983, 1984. For those two summers.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the same era. And going to Atlantic City, that was the shit, man. Everybody went to Atlantic City.
Yeah.
That was like the deal. And you had to dress up in the casinos. You had to look pretty nice. It wasn't at all like Vegas casinos.
Right. No sweatpants back then.
Do you remember the big elephant over there in Atlantic City? What was that? Elephant. It was a big elephant. You could go into it. It was called Lucy the Elephant. Come on.
Was it like an amusement park?
No, it was just like a roadside attraction.
Maybe because we grew up sort of so close to there.
Maybe.
We just didn't do the touristy things or something.
There's a giant elephant. It always comes to mind.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, when's the last time you were? I was in Jersey. I was in South Jersey. 1996 is the last year I was there. When's the last year you were there?
Wow. I think 2016.
Oh, good. Okay. You were just there then, really.
Yeah. And that's a whole other story. I was my mom's hospice nurse.
Oh, yeah.
So
I was with my dad when he passed.
God bless you.
I wasn't like, the nurse, but I mean, we had hospice people coming in. They were like angels, man. They were fantastic people. But did you have those people with you as well?
They came for like an hour
and then they would
a day, Monday through Friday.
Yeah.
Which like when I was writing was like, which is great because her kidneys didn't fail on weekends. That was party time. You know what I mean? Like, but the 24/7 stuff was just me.
Yeah.
So that
but,
was
but you'll never you'd never give that back, huh?
No way.
Isn't it amazing?
No way.
Like I find that time I spent with my dad the last 5 days, man, it was good.
Yeah,
good.
And it, like Vietnam at the same time, it was horrifying in certain ways, but beautiful and wonderful. And it's such a privilege to get to bear witness to somebody's death.
It's like, you know, like I said, I have a child and I read that book, you know, What to Expect When You're Expecting. And if you're lucky enough to die in a way where you can be on hospice and just, you know, it's coming and you're going out, then you check off all those same things. Like when you're expecting a baby, you check them all off, you know, first this happens and this happens.
Right.
And your feet are cold and then you try to get up and then you want water, and then you stop eating and then you see people, you know.
Is that in What to Expect When You're Expecting?
No, it's in the... It's in the hospice checklist.
So I was like, how macabre.
I guess what I'm doing is like, I'm just comparing that like there's a way to come into the world and there's a way to go out.
Because that's a wonderful book. I mean, I kind of wish I had read before I went there. Like,
you mean the hospice? You must have gotten the hospice rules. Like in hospice, they'll give you like, these are the 15 signs you're going to look for.
I guess. It probably is like, oh, whatever.
Anyway, I think it's going to be better to go out that way.
Where are the trash bags and the bandages? Yeah. I know what I'm doing.
But it's a better way. I don't know.
No,
how do we get to this? In other words, I don't want to die in trauma. That's my point.
Me neither. And I think the tide's turning. In fact, I just DVR'd a documentary called, I think, something, Six New Ways or something. Anyway, there are people, like in Canada, you can plan your own death and like have a party and do euthanasia.
Yeah.
And play the music you want, and have the meal
you want,
have the people
that's
over.
What I want.
Like, why on earth do we do it the other way?
I don't know. It is odd. Hey, listen, I am so happy to meet you. You
Likewise.
Are such a talent. I feel like I could talk to you all day. You're such
Likewise.
A talent, and you've just accomplished so much, and you continue to just plow forward with so much stuff. I think on YouTube, I saw you have over 500 or over 700 videos.
Probably.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
So much content.
It's kind of a problem.
It's exciting.
I can't stop.
It's fantastic. And next, you're going to be judging Story Smash.
That's right.
Please, I want you to do that so much.
I am totally doing it. I'm going to go down for the show this Saturday night.
You'd be great.
Check it out.
I'm telling you, it's super, super funny. You guys should check out the website, storysmashshow.com. You should do that because I built the website, so I know it's good.
Yeah. She built it.
She
had the hammers and the nails. She was inside the computer.
All right, you guys, I got to wrap it up. I want to thank you so much for tuning in today. Tweet Mary over on Twitter at Mary Bird Song and let her know that you like her story. And then tweet me over there as well at Storyworthy. Would you do that? Yes. Thank you. Yes. And I want to thank the sponsors on the show today. Really, you guys, when you support my sponsors, then you are supporting me. And I thank you. And on behalf, one more time, of the very talented and just, you're just so fantastic. You are such an inspiration, and I'm just super happy you came. Thank you, Mary Birdsong.
Thank you for having me.
My name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Story Worthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.